Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. Local libraries have been around for a long time. In fact, they have been identified as having existed 5,000 years ago and longer. They have been an important source for information, research, and for providing access to books to those who might otherwise not be exposed to them. They are still evolving and, in many cases, filling important community needs that go far beyond the lending of books. We have some examples in this segment from Fairmont City in Illinois and Ferguson, Missouri. With us to talk about it are Katie Heaton, manager of the Fairmont City Library Center. It's part of the Mississippi Valley Library District. And Vicki Hart is executive director of the Mississippi Valley Library District. Ladies, thanks so much for being with us. Nice to have you.
Thank you for having us.
Well, let me start with you, Vicki. I've mentioned that libraries are evolving. They really are a lot different today than they were 10 years ago, 20 years ago, aren't they?
They are. I've been a librarian almost 40 years. And it's not your parents' library. It's not your grandparents' library anymore. It's the library of the community. It's not so much about just books, but everything else, including programming for children, programming for teens, just for us in Fairmont City, it's just the ability to fax internationally to let people send documents somewhere. That's where libraries are moving.
They've become community centers.
In many ways, yes. Yeah. A place in Fairmont City, there is no place for the children after school. So where do they come? They come to us. We have Wi-Fi. We have plug-in stations. We have computers. We also have homework help. It's a safe place.
Wish you'd been around when I was going to school. Could use some of those services. Katie, tell us about how it's working in Fairmont City, because you have a very high percentage Spanish speaking population there, and much of what you do is directed toward this community, isn't it?
That is very true. Most of our community, I want to say I work with about 80% that's Hispanic, and so they have very special needs. The children, for example, cannot go home to do their homework because their moms and dads might only have a fourth through sixth grade education level, and they may not speak English or be able to read English, and so the children need to have some kind of support in place to do something simple, just their homework. And also, there's nothing to do in the village. There was little things to get into. And so the library actually offers after-school activities or weekend activities so the kids have something to do, and the teens actually are off the street doing better activities than if they were just thinking of things to do while they were on the street.
How do you handle the language situation?
Well, for a English speaker who does not speak fluent Spanish, definitely have to partner with people who do. And one of the ways that we're successful in Fairmont City is that we hire from Fairmont City. It gives jobs. There's a couple of jobs that we actually give as being a library there, which is very important in your community involvement. And so we work with interpreters. We have Spanish and English speakers who work there. Volunteers are bilingual also. And it really does make it a welcoming place for anyone who comes into the building.
Vicki, how did all of this come about? It didn't just happen, obviously. You had to find, recognize a need and then fill it.
I think it goes back to about 2000, mm-hmm. when it was first, you know, the community didn't have a library. There was no public school. And so we were able to go in. The parochial school at the time gave us a room where we could set up a little makeshift library, and just to show the village that not having a library, maybe that was a need that they had. And I want to say that part of what makes us successful are our community relationships, the partnerships that we've built from the very start, including with the village. And over time, the village voted to become part of our library district. We first moved in with the American Legion. I think we were the first library to ever share space with a full-service bar. And then when they went, their membership lessened, so we bought that building. And now our partnership is with the Bank of Edwardsville, who also shares the space because there was no bank in the small village. And they also have bilingual speakers. And it too was a need. So I think it was just showing the community, you need us more than you think you do, and this is what we can do for you, and it's not just about the books. Would you agree with that, Katie?
I would definitely agree, because when we first started to work with the community, their response was, I don't know if we really need a library. Well, it's easy for us to say that they were an unserved population, and we could see the benefit for them having someone like us come into their community to give them all the support that they needed. But we definitely had to sell the idea of what a library does for a community. And you had to make it a very simple question. And they're like, why do I need a library? What good will it be for my benefit? And so it came down to a very simple question on their part, or like a challenge. If you have a question, bring that question to me, and I'll figure out the answer for you, or I'll figure out how to get the answer for you. And it isn't always about the book. Sometimes there's other ways to get information. But once we put that challenge out there, all kinds of questions walk through that door. And as the needs unfolded in front of us, then that's when we started figuring out ways to fill those needs.
Did the community reach out to you, or did you reach out to the community first? What got the momentum going?
Yeah, it all started with this grant that I had wrote. It was a multicultural grant. And I went to Collinsville Unit 10, and I asked where the minorities were in the Collinsville Unit 10 school district, because I wanted to make sure that I did the right programming for our area. I mean, it's a melting pot in the St. Louis metro area, and I wanted to be sure. And I was surprised myself when I found out that there was a large Hispanic population in right outside our borders and partially in our borders. They were half in, half out. And I went down and met Shirley Curry, who was the principal at Holy Rosary at the time, and I started working with her. And that's how we first identified this community.
And as regards the Mississippi Valley Library District, Vicki, how are you working with this organization here as that was all taking place?
Well, at the time it started, we were not a district library. We were just a city library, and in the process of becoming a district library. And when we became a district in 04, and that's in 06 was when we invited them to become an official part of the district. And so now I have two library centers as part of my library district, but it all includes the entire Unit 10 school district. That was the goal of our library district, to make sure every child in the school district was eligible for a library card, period. So, and then that includes Fairmont City. So that was, I think, one of the big goals, was to make sure that every child could use the library.
We'll come back and talk about some of the services that are being provided by this library, but I want to welcome into our studio Scott Bonner from the Ferguson Library. He is the executive director of that institution. Scott, thank you for being with us.
Oh, thank you. Can I just say I'm really excited to be with Katie and Vicki, because they're doing such awesome things.
Well, you are,
thank
too, you. And one of the things, reasons we wanted to have you on today, it's the second time around. We talked with you a year and a half ago, I guess, about the role the Ferguson Library was playing post the Michael Brown shooting. Where are you now? It was a very active and viable community center during that period, and since. Where are you now in your community activities?
We are trying to keep that kind of spirit alive and move forward. The whole point is to be responsive to the community as we possibly can. And so we're constantly trying to identify what's needed, how can we fill the need, what's needed, how can we fill the need. So it's about being dynamic, and we're trying to do as much as we can to be responsive.
Has the momentum that began after the Michael Brown shooting built? Has it stayed the same, or has it waned a little bit perhaps?
We had the opportunity to go into a super high gear in 2014 and 2015 because we had all kinds of people coming to us and saying, how can we help? And which meant we could just like blossom programs constantly. There was no way to sustain that kind of pace without burning everyone out. So we've settled into kind of like a new normal, a much more active and dynamic library than previously, but it's unsustainable to keep moving like we did in 2014.
You actually had, I guess I shouldn't call it a windfall, but some dollars started to roll into the library, which was a big help, correct?
Absolutely. In 2014, we got $450,000 worth of donations, which has allowed us to operate like a better funded library for the past couple years, and will let us continue operating like that for another year or two. And then when that money goes away, we'll see what happens.
Well, it never hurts to have an infusion.
It's been beautiful.
Infusion. But I have to laugh at Vicki and Katie as they were hearing you and watching you say that. Their jaws were literally dropping.
Oh, mine was at the time, too.
I want some of that money.
Yeah. Well, what about funding over there in Fairmont City? I mean, how is it supported?
So we're supported by the Mississippi Valley Library District as a whole district. So we're not a standalone library. We're like a branch library, the Collinsville Center.
And our district is a standalone taxing district. So the majority of our funds come from property tax and other special taxes. And we have a 7-member board of trustees, and we control our money. We do not have to answer to the city about how we spend our money, just to the board. And so that gives us some independence in terms of, you know, yes, I have this much money on my budget to pay my electric bill. I don't have to beg the city to give me my money for the electric bill and so on and so forth. But in addition to that, we also have the standard income of fines and fees and donations, although not quite on that level. I'm trying to think where the rest of them. And grants.
Yeah,
we write grants.
Well,
mm-hmm. I mean, the Library Aware Award, one of the reasons we decided to apply for it was, well, we have nothing to lose and $10,000 to gain. So.
Katie, that's how it all got started. You wrote a grant.
Oh, right.
And that was accepted.
Yes. Right. Yeah. Vicki came to us and said, I think this sounds like your community. You guys need to write it. And so Kyla Waltemeyer, she and I are the building managers, and we usually and commonly will write things together. Kyla got started first with narratives and then asked me to kind of fill in a few things on my own, too. And I had so much to put in there, I gave up writing paragraphs, and I had to start putting everything in bulleted forms because I couldn't fit all the information in. Mm-hmm. And then I went back to these guys and said, gosh, guys, but there's so much story to tell. I couldn't tell it all. Does this look okay? And they're like, yeah, it looks great. Let's just send it in.
You said something interesting early on. You were talking about being associated with a bank. Mm-hmm. And my impression and understanding is that of the services that you provide, banking is one of them?
Well, the library doesn't provide the banking, but we share the building now with the bank, where we had shared it with the American Legion, and the bar was open at night, and the library was open in the day. So we moved beyond that now, and now we're sharing the building with the bank. And because there was we were doing literacy, and they needed to do banking literacy also. And they only had a credit union in town. It definitely wasn't serving both languages. So it was definitely something that the community needed to move their community forward.
Scott Bonner, what about some of the other non-book lending services that you're providing now that weren't there a couple of years ago?
First off, I want to say about the bank. That is a wonderful example of the way that libraries are community builders, because you don't provide banking service. You found a partner. You brought them in. You made them connect with the people that you have close contact with. That's beautiful, and that's exactly what we try to do as well.
Great.
And that's the way the libraries work. Everything is a partnership. So some of the things that we're doing, big focus right now on early literacy in Ferguson-Florissant School District. And so we've been working with them, incorporating their literacy goals into our literacy programs. We're about to launch literacy kits. We have like the Readings and Race Book Club, which has been phenomenally successful. But I guess that's related to books. But anyway, it's started by Carla Fletcher, and it's people that have like life-changing experiences talking about books that deal with the heavy issues. There's a lot of desire for STEM projects. Every time we run a STEM program, we get big attendance. And so we're doing robotics and coding classes right now. We're getting ready to do a first Lego League competitive team this summer. That kind of thing. As we identify a need, we chase it down and find a way to fill it. And it's all kinds of things, like you said, well beyond just books. Books are lovely. We love books. We will always love books. But libraries are about lifelong learning, cultural literacy, and being at the center of their community, which is, you know, books are a means.
Just to clarify, you talk about STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math. What is STEAM an acronym for?
Throwing in art to allow for some creativity and for some kind of personal expansion or growth.
It's moving towards STEAM now. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And if I could just speak real quickly, we have a Project Next Generation grant sponsored by the State Library, where we do programs for our teens. And one of the things we did is we did a drone program.
Excellent.
And we had almost 40 teenagers, which is unheard of.
That's
so
beautiful.
I just wanted to speak to that because I understand exactly what you're saying.
That's your next generation of parents who will be sending their kids to the library.
Absolutely.
Because of their own exposure to it. Mm-hmm. Have to take a break. Let's do that now. We're talking about community libraries as a community center, if you will. Lots going on in our area. We'll continue the conversation with Scott Bonner, director of the Ferguson Public Library. Katie Heaton is manager of the Fairmont City Library Center. And Vicki Hart is executive director of the Mississippi Valley Library District. We'll take a short break, come back, and continue the conversation. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again, and welcome back as we continue our conversation on libraries as community centers and a much broader community resource than has been the case in the not-too-distant past. And my guests in studio are Scott Bonner of Ferguson, Katie Heaton of Fairmont City, and Vicki Hart, Executive Director of the Mississippi Valley Library District. You know, I watched with interest as you guys interacted during that commercial break. There are dots that connect all of you folks together, aren't they? I mean, Katie, mm-hmm. you were just saying that Ferguson has some influence on you and vice versa. What is that?
It was an interesting story because I kind of thought it was funny that when we found out we were going to be here today that there was going to be a representative from the Ferguson Library, because I actually got a phone call from a patron who lives in Ferguson, and he was a Spanish speaker, and he needed to have his taxes done, but he needed it done in Spanish support. And he had heard that Fairmont City Library Center provided Spanish support for tax filing. And I said, yes, we do. We partner with AARP, and we do have Spanish translators. So yes, you can get your taxes done over here. And so he came all the way from Ferguson, Missouri to Fairmont City, Illinois to get his taxes done this year.
That's wonderful. I'm so glad that he was able to get the help. That's great. I've just recently become kind of more aware of the Spanish-speaking community in Ferguson, and so we are right now trying to build up a Spanish language collection and that kind of thing. And so, you know, I hope that anyone else in Ferguson who has that particular need comes and talks to me and lets me know how we can help.
You know, I think folks who may have just joined us will be surprised to find out that we're talking about libraries here. Again, that points out how much the change. Katie, how does it happen that there is such a large Spanish speaking population in Fairmont City?
Well, you know what? Historically, Fairmont City, Illinois has always been a migrant area. Mm-hmm. Probably something to do with the location of St. Louis, Missouri, the National Road, the Mississippi River. I'm sure that all plays a part in it. And the waves weren't always Hispanic. The original waves were French, and there's some Czechoslovakian and some Polish waves that are woven into the fabric of Fairmont City. It's just that the current wave of immigrants starting, I believe, in the 1990s happens to be Hispanic, most of which are from Mexico. There's some Guatemala, some Puerto Rico, but mostly out of Mexico.
You know, there's so much concern in the country today about immigration, and particularly with Hispanics. How are you handling that? I mean, I would venture to say if you've got that large a population, there are probably some undocumented people there. How do you deal with situations of that kind?
Well, as a librarian, you should love everyone who walks through your door. Doesn't matter in their age, their color, where they're from, you service your people. And so for me, that's never been a concern. I always service my people no matter what they need. But for my families, they have concerns. There's different things that they felt good about when Obama was in the administration. And there's things that they're feeling right now under the Trump administration that, you know, changes for them. Undocumented is, you know, there's families that have been here for years. The families are split. Parents are undocumented. First children are undocumented. Perhaps they're DACA, Deferred Action Child.
The Dreamers.
Arrivals and the Dreamers. Mm-hmm. And then there's the younger siblings that are probably born and raised here and consider themselves American, and rightfully so. So it's really hard to break apart those families and tell them where they belong or don't belong when they're just trying to do what's right for their families.
Vicki, how are you dealing with that in your district?
Well, I think what we're trying to do is just be there. If they need to come in to, you know, again, in Fairmont, we partner with the Latino Roundtable. And also we've had feelers out to the Chamber of Commerce?
The Hispanic Chamber of Commerce.
Hispanic Chamber of Commerce here in St. Louis. Mm-hmm. to make sure that they're that we have the resources. If they come in and say, I need a lawyer who speaks Spanish, mm-hmm. that we can refer them to some phone numbers so they can get in contact with something like that. Or, again, they need to be able to have a document notarized. We've had people turned away at other places because the document was in Spanish. And we don't do that because it's none of our business what it says or what language it's in. All we're doing is notarizing the signature. So we happily do that. But these kinds of things happen. And so our goal is just, as Katie said, when they walk through the door, they get the best customer service that we can provide, whether they're white, African American, Hispanic, Asian, we don't care. We're there to serve us.
Scott Bonner, your situation, again, after the Michael Brown incident was a little bit different. But as I recall, the Ferguson Library became, I think you called it on our last meeting here, a safe haven for people who just wanted to get out of whatever was going on in the community.
Right. We made it a point to be as welcome and opening, open and welcoming as we possibly could. The whole point was to say, if any human being in Ferguson is welcome here. Right, and that's part of my philosophy that the libraries work best whenever they have a local focus, a tight focus on a specific community, so they can understand their community, define that community, and respond to it. And that means every single person in the community can't play favorites. You can't be judgy. You got to be open and welcome to every human being.
Would it be safe to say that you considered yourself something of a sanctuary during that period?
For many, yes.
Yeah.
I think so. And a lot of people came and just kind of, we provided consistency, normalcy, a quiet, safe space. We provided information for people that were questioning themselves and everything around them. We provided whatever we could to help people. I think a lot of people were very thankful that we were able to be there for them.
And as I recall, you came to Ferguson just very shortly before all of this happened. So you right. were thrust right into the middle of it very, very quickly.
Certainly, yep. And that meant that I was the new guy and was able to get away with a whole lot of stuff.
Well, the community is grateful that you did. Let me come back to the Fairmont City situation. I have a list here somewhere that I'm kind of looking for of some of the things that you do. And one of them that caught my eye is bike repair.
That's true.
Again, this doesn't sound like a library to me.
Well, we partner with a group called Cycle of Giving, and they are all about books and bikes. And they come to Fairmont City once a year to repair the bicycles. And first it started off with something for the children, but actually it evolved into things for the families, because we actually had a middle-aged man who brought his very much in need of repair bicycle, and we could not get it repaired. And so we had some other bikes that had been refurbished, and so we offered to trade his bicycle. And the man was overwhelmed with the generosity, and I didn't really understand why until I found out that his bicycle was how he got to work each day. And his bike was really having trouble, and to get a new bike or a refurbished bike was just amazing for him.
It's everything.
It was everything for him, yeah.
Remarkable. We have a caller who wants to get into this discussion. Our time is winding down, but we'll bring in Justin to make his case for whatever it is. Go ahead, Justin.
Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
I would like to echo and correct your one panelist and just say, not just librarians, everyone should love everybody who walks through the door. But that's a whole other conversation. I had an interesting experience where I was doing a clean out. Our church moved into a new building, and we found hundreds and hundreds of maps and land surveys and called the St. Louis County Library, and they actually sent a custodian or somebody out and picked all of that up. And so, you know, libraries definitely take donations of all kinds. And then the other thing is, as a person who doesn't have the patience for reading and never has, the way my brain works, I've always been amazed at the diverse services. Our local library has baking molds. They have telescopes that they've partnered with the Astronomy Club. They have just, you know, tons and tons of things that even as a person who never really picks up a book, really enjoys and takes advantage of, and enables me to bring my daughter there and get her more into books and reading and so things like that as well.
Justin, let me stop you right there because time's getting away. Thank you for the call. You ladies were reacting to that. This all sounded very familiar to you.
Oh, very much familiar to me, because it isn't always about books first. We have a lot of visual learners out there, mm-hmm. and you have to be able to provide knowledge in the way that the people are learning. So yes, we have drones, and yes, we have telescopes. And yes, we do virtual reality, and you know, we do the things that are currently out there that the people are interested in. And then we say, oh, and by the way, if you want to learn more, there's some books.
Right. Are your telescopes through a partnership with St. Louis Astronomical Society? Ours is too.
Yes, they are. Yes.
Great.
We're going to have to leave it at that, folks. They're a most interesting conversation. Let me just point out, by the way, that poverty rates have decreased, reading and math scores have increased, high school graduation rates have increased in your area in Fairmont City. That's what the library is making happen. And I'm sure you have similar kinds of stories to tell.
Absolutely.
Scott Bonner. I want to thank you all so much for being with us. Scott Bonner Ferguson, thank you for being with us. Vicki Hart, Executive Director of the Mississippi Valley Library District, thank you.
Thank you.
And Katie Heaton, thank you. You're, of course, with the Fairmont City Library Center. Congratulations to all the work that you're doing, guys. Great to have you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.